Welcome to Health Hats, learning on the journey towards best health. I'm Danny Van Leeuwen, a two-legged, cisgender, old white man of privilege living in a food oasis who can afford many hats and knows a little bit about a lot of healthcare and a lot about very little. Most people wear hats one at a time, but I wear them all at once. We will listen and learn about what it takes to adjust to life's realities in the awesome circus of healthcare. Let's make some sense of all of this. I feel good. James Brown. I didn't know how I'd tie this episode together. What was the storyline? We're going to hear my conversation with Jody Churchill Chapin, an OB nurse and a green nurse. She supports moms delivering babies, and she advises people on the use of medical marijuana. How do those fit together? While I'm editing this episode, I'm also working out the horn part of I Feel Good on my Barry Sax. Okay, I am a bit down. Eyeball deep in COVID-19, maintaining my best health routine, and trying to stay sane. Full disclosure, medical marijuana is part of my routine, along with music and connecting with people on their journey towards best health. I need to feel good some of the time. I got you. Jody, thank you for joining me. I really appreciate it. We met just, I think, a couple of weeks ago on a call. Jill Woodworth call, right?
Yes, it was. Her 100th episode.
Her 100th episode. And it was really a moving, the call. And the thing that I felt that was moving was everybody was dealing with so much. I don't know, what were there, 20, 25 people on the call?
There was a good amount. And then some people that kind of came in and out.
Right. It was selected by people that Jill knows and interviewed, and they're people who are dealing with many family challenges. And what was striking to me was, well, just the range of challenges and the complexity of the challenges that people were just alluding to by saying, like, yeah, my son's just been having seizures and we're trying to figure out whether to use telehealth or do we need to go to the doctor. But they were like upbeat. This was just another problem that they were trying to solve. And this is just like real life. The reason I called you or got in touch with Jill to say, who was that lady and introduce me, is that, well, I felt the affinity because we're both nurses. And you were talking about the challenge of being an OB nurse now. You were kind of crushed. You were
still
like...
Still am.
Yeah. First, maybe what we should do first is, if you're like in a social situation, how do you introduce yourself?
I usually tell people that I'm a nurse. I've been a registered nurse for over 30 years in a hospital setting with an extensive background in women's health and labor and delivery. Mm-hmm. I am also, when I'm not delivering babies at a local hospital, I am partner and director of nursing for Green Nurse Group. And Green Nurse Group is a nonprofit whole health consulting agency that serves as a liaison between patients and professionals in the medical cannabis industry. Okay. So they really are two opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
Because you're not usually talking about cannabis and labor and delivery and birth. So they're really two separate hats at this point in time.
this introduction, Jody and I riffed for a while on social distancing. I can't accept what is. I'm easing into this new normal. I'm adapting fine, but I hate it. I'm a touching, hugging, retired nurse. Arr, I do hate it. Sugar and spice.
As far as me having to deal with the lack of touch and being able to, like, I think my biggest thing with this whole COVID and social distancing, I think in regular public, I'm okay. If I'm somewhere where I don't know people, I'm fine with staying 6 feet away from them. I'll give them their distance. Most times I don't want to be that close to them anyway. But where I find it really difficult is when I'm around people that make me feel good. I'm a hugger. A hugger. I'm a kisser. I'm a toucher. When I'm talking to someone, I'm touching their arm, their shoulder. When I'm at work, I mean, labor and delivery, it's an interpersonal part of nursing. We're very personal. We're into touching. So we'll sit there at the nurse's station, and if someone's like, oh, I got an ache, I'll go right over. Like, I even have CBD oils and lotions in my bag that I would whip right out, and I'd work on the knot in a shoulder or what have you. And now that's taboo. Mm-hmm. Now we can't even sit near each other to talk close. Our computers have to be 6 feet apart, and we're in our masks, and everybody's wearing their surgical caps now. And it's just so, it's so distant. Even when going into a patient's room, usually I go up, I go close, I touch them on their leg or their arm. Hi, how are you? I'm Jody. Shake their partner's hand. After getting to know them for the shift, then at the end of my shift, I'm giving hugs at the end of a delivery. And now none of that is happening. And I'm feeling so lost. Like, that's where it hurts the most, is when I go into, like, when I'm used to going in to give a hug, then I have to step back, and it's like, am I being punished for this? Which, I mean, I know it's not me personally, but it's like, what did I do that the universe is doing this?
Yeah.
Something that felt so good. Something that when you can't fix anything, when you can't fix something, when someone is sad and you know that you don't have the right answers, a touch, a hug, a kiss. And that's not happening. I just feel so starved. You can only give so much self-love. Many times I break down and just start crying. It's hard. It's hard.
It is hard. It is. I'm a nurse, and one of the things that has been glorious for me about being a nurse is it's sort of legalized nosiness. And this opportunity to have these fleeting intimacies, and in whatever setting, I've done home care, ICU, emergency department, home rehabilitation, and yes, I think that fleeting intimacy is really precious about nursing, and part of it, of course, is, as you said, the touch, the hug, the, you know, that physical expression of empathy is really important. And I know now the hardest thing for me is that I can't hug my kids and my grandkids. Like, just feels crazy and very upsetting. Like, this is early days. But are you starting to see any, like, alternative ways of expressing that caring and intimacy within these, like, ridiculous constraints that we have? Are you feeling like there's a glimpse of anything, or is it at the point still where it's like, this just sucks? It's, you know,
I have fully gowned before and put an N95 on, and I have embraced some of my closest people because I can't go without it. So I have put on PPE just so I can show affection.
Next.
That's the only way I've found around it.
Okay. I mean, because I feel like right now our interventions are gross, meaning gross as opposed to refined.
Mm-hmm.
We're managing with a sickle or a sledgehammer, you know, when I think where we'll go is with a needle or a scalpel, mm-hmm. where we get more, like, what are the parameters? So, for example, you know, I this is totally different, but, you know, the other day I was talking with somebody who had a bunch of kids, and each child was allowed to have one friend that would be included in their pod so they could have play dates. So I'm thinking, oh my goodness, what are the implications of that? And I don't know. I mean, to me, it sounded a little risky, but I also thought, okay, people are trying to figure out, what can I do safely and maintain my sanity and continue with life? And that's part of this unpausing. And it sounds like you're gowning up for a hug is an example of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what can I do? Like, this hug is worth the dress up.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, right. But it sort of, then it's like, okay, you know, now you're like having to ration, okay, I got to prioritize. You know, there's only so many times I can gown up.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So that is interesting. So what are you seeing around you with your colleagues? How are they adapting? What are they coming up with as a ways to be a nurse? I mean, being a nurse is special.
Right. You know what? It's lots of verbal encouragement. Because now that we are having to wear more protection, I'm finding now many of us are now wearing scrub caps, whether we're going into the operating room or not. We are wearing our masks. We are wearing even protective glasses around, because women can come in and deliver babies and huffing and puffing and aerosolizing all around us. But what we're finding is that the scrub caps, we're getting different kinds, different things. Because we're finding that our noses are getting worn down, our ears are uncomfortable. Just helping each other, different ways to wear our PPE now. But the encouragement, I think the encouragement is a big thing. And when we recognize that somebody's having a hard time, we pull them aside and give them a little extra. I know I've had to be pulled aside into the crying room.
Oh, so meaning your colleagues.
Our colleagues,
as opposed to
my
your
colleagues.
Patients. Yes.
Right. I think... Just trying to encourage each other, because it is difficult to perform our jobs, you know. And then, I mean, then when we get to the patients, as far as the patients go, you know, that's something that takes a lot of encouragement as well, because these patients, I mean, it's stressful trying to gear up for a labor, you know, and birth process anyway.
Right.
But now so much is being taken away from them. So many rely on their own support group. They'll have their significant other. They'll have a doula. They'll have other family members in.
Right,
family
right,
members
right.
will be waiting in the waiting room, cheering them on from afar.
Right.
And now all of that has come to a halt. They're only allowed one person in with them during that birth process, and it has to go through the whole visit. You can't interchange anybody. It's that one person that's with you from labor, delivery, birth, postpartum, and home, which that process has shortened too. Now a vaginal birth is 24 hours, where it used to be 48 hours, and now a C-section is 48 hours, where it used to be a 72-hour stay. So even that's been shortened up. And then you get into, if you have a patient that's a PUI, which is a person under investigation, or COVID positive, gosh, then they have even more taken away. They're not allowed their visitors. They're put in isolation. The baby's put in isolation. The baby's taken away from them for 24 hours. I mean, it is sad. So, and now that we're finding that women without symptoms, the asymptomatic women, are also positive. We've had women. So now any woman that comes in that's going to be admitted automatically gets a test, COVID test, regardless of her symptoms. The significant other, their temperature is taken, and their denial of COVID questions is also documented in the patient's chart, which I have never, ever in my life documented any, I've never taken a partner's temperature or vital sign, let alone, you know, document it in my patient's chart. So that's a little weird. But I mean, I think they require a lot of encouragement because they're being forced to make choices. Oh my gosh, should I stay home and deliver this baby if I have the possibility of being taken away? But not everybody has a setup for a home birth, and there aren't enough providers out there that will assist them with a home birth.
Right.
So that's scary too, that we have to reassure them that it's still safe to come into the hospital. Yes, you might not be able to follow through with everything that was on your birth plan, which, I mean, oftentimes many people can't follow through with their birth plan. Birth plans change.
Yes.
But especially with this, that they know that there's restrictions right up front. And I think what we're going to have to deal with, what we're going to have to watch for, is postpartum depression. Because people build up to this one day and then it's deflated because it didn't turn out the way they wanted. And this just sets them up, and then their hormonal imbalance from having a baby. And, you know, then once they get home, they're back into being quarantined. So I think, and that's huge, because I think these cases are going to be missed because they might not call on the doctor for a visit. They might not be aware of that, the telehealth visits that can happen. So I'm concerned.
No, I appreciate that. I think in my work right now, I'm focusing on people at home. That I feel like the industry is dealing with acute care and the medical settings. But as you're alluding to here, now my words, more than 80% of dealing with COVID does not happen in an institution. It happens at home. And we are woefully inadequate. And how are we going to deal with that? And you're bringing up a, an important area is, okay, so now I'm going home with a newborn and my girlfriends aren't coming over, or my friends or my extended family, and it's all on me, or it's all on me and my partner. And then there's my three kids who need me too, and I'm exhausted and I've been through this experience. And so those are the kinds of things like I think about right now. And, and how do we offer answers to those everyday questions that there's millions of them? Very few of them are about PPE. You know, it's, you know, there's just this life stuff, you know.
Right.
How am I going to get help taking care of my newborn baby? I'm going crazy. I'm exhausted. You know, these are the
And
this
and
is real life.
It sure is. And they're, you know, the struggle is real. The concerns are real. So with anxiety and depression are increasing, postpartum depression, and also child and spousal abuse, that's going unreported now too, with people in quarantine. It's scary.
It is scary. It is scary. So what do you recommend? Like, okay, so now you've now had 8 weeks or whatever of experience in this maternity support world. So if there are families, women and partners, they're pregnant, they're anticipating, what do you advise? Like, how can they go into the situation and maximize the health of that situation?
Well, I think their biggest fear is that they're going to deliver alone.
Isn't that heartbreaking? Oh my gosh, like dying alone. I mean,
Right, exactly. Delivering alone, dying alone, but alone without, you know, people that they trust, that they were planning. And then we come in and they see our eyes, you know, we have our scrub caps on, we have our masks on. Oftentimes we have gowns on, gloves. And I mean, I wear glasses and goggles, so I am completely garbed up, you know, and it's like an alien is coming to deliver your baby. And that's not what they
That didn't sign up for that, right? There's the cohort of people who are going to be, this is so strange, and they're overwhelmed. But then there are that smaller group of people who are more take charge. And there are things that they can do. Before it was, bring your partner, bring your doula, make sure somebody's taking care of your kids that you trust so that you can focus on you're going to have a baby. Okay, so now that isn't enough. Now they need more tools in their toolbox to have a successful experience. So what do you think some of those things might be?
I think what they, at this point, they need to trust their bedside nurse. I mean, it really comes down to, you know, how we help them through it, because now we have become their prime support person along with their one other support person. So we're there for both of them. So we have to put back on all of the hats again. It's not just about clinical care. Okay. It's now about emotional support and how to make this situation better for them. Because we've also taken away walking in the hallways to them too. We don't allow anybody in our kitchens either, where they could usually walk around, help themselves to anything in the kitchen, food. So many things have been cut short. So we suggest to them, bring in your own snacks, bring in a cooler. But you know, basically it kind of,
is there a way to meet you ahead of time so that they have a sense that, okay, Jody is going to be there? And
yeah, our unit is too big. Our shifts change. It's tough to know, because I mean, I wear a few different hats at work. I'm triage nurse, I'm charge nurse, labor and delivery nurse.
Okay.
It's
sort of the luck of the draw.
It is.
So the oh my God, you know, trust. I mean,
it's a huge trust game.
That is a huge trust game. Well, you know what is interesting though? I mean, so then the science or the art or both is, how do you build that trust in 5 seconds? Then that's on you as the nurse. So, you know, I'm going to go on a limb here and say you're pretty good at that. So how do you do it?
You know what? I go in with a positive attitude, and granted they can't see my smile behind my mask, but you smile big enough, they can see it in your eyes.
Yeah.
Okay. It's really feeling them out. I mean, I think that's the great thing about having so much experience in the triage department too, because you're seeing many people and all of their significant others and their baggage and issues that they might carry. And when you walk into the room, you kind of got to get a feel for the room, for the patient, it comes with years of experience.
Yeah.
I mean, you walk into a room and you can tell the vibe, whether they're going to need that gentle hand or whether you can joke around with them and throw out some profanities. So you just have to kind of feel the room, be able to read the room and play your cards accordingly, because some people want lots of information, some people want nothing.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing is just to let them know that it's all about them. You never let them know that it's busy on the rest of the unit. You never let them know that, you know, you're having a tough time with other people, that somebody without a fetal heart rate just came in. You have to make sure that when you walk into each and every room that they know that they're the only patient.
Yeah. So one of my absolute favorite episodes I ever did was with, what's his name? Jason Stewart, who was the clown supervisor at Boston Children's. They have a clown unit that goes from room to room. And when I worked there, and I led their patient family experience initiative. And when I worked there, he hosted a class on reading the room. And it was one of the more valuable lessons I ever learned. When I interviewed him for my podcast, I that's what it was about, you know, reading the room. And I agree. I think that being able to trust myself that I could read the room in 5 seconds. And what was going on. And, you know, I was probably right 2/3 of the time. It wasn't like a huge amount, but I wasn't terrible at it. But you know what I mean? It's like
you
read the room and get it right every time. You just
right.
can't. There's just too many permutations. But I did think that sometimes I thought, why didn't I learn this in nursing school? This read the room, like fast. And it was, there was some you could learn. This was not that big of a mystery.
Right.
So I appreciate you saying that, the ability to read the room. I think that's a gift. That's a gift to your patients. Because coming in with this might work. And I think a part of the ability of learning to read the room is trying something and in the next 5 seconds realized you read it wrong and shift, right?
I mean, right.
Because you got to trust it. I think this is what's going on. And you know that if you blow it, it'll happen quick.
Oh, yeah. And that sure is that has sure happened before. I've walked out of the room and it's like, damn, that didn't go the way I expected it to go.
Right. And then you can, the next time you go in with a different approach.
Exactly.
Which is like, okay, that's good. I mean, that's learning. That's
right. And then sometimes, no matter what approach you bring in, there's no winning. And it's like, you just, okay, somebody else is up.
Yeah. So I do have another question.
Sure.
So how do you keep your family safe as a person in a high-risk occupation?
That's a great question, because that's a huge fear. It obviously weighs heavy on my mind when I'm working with patients who are either infected and those who we don't know that are infected with COVID-19.
Yeah.
I'm very concerned about bringing it home to my family and loved ones, especially because we hear that there's so many people that are testing positive that are asymptomatic or false negatives, people that are symptomatic yet they show up negative and then a couple of days later or, you know, retesting, then they show up positive.
Do you have like a routine that you do that when you leave the hospital, you have a routine? When you walk in the front door of your house, you have a routine?
I do. I mean, you know, as usual, I use all the appropriate precautions at work anyways, even pre-COVID, good hand washing and, you know, trying not to touch my face, but definitely go through appropriate precautions. But when I show up to work, luckily on my unit, we are required to change into hospital scrubs, because in labor and delivery, you can head to the operating room, the surgical suite, on any given notice. So we are lucky enough that we get to leave our street clothes in our locker room. Mm-hmm. I wear a separate set of shoes at work than I do at home.
Okay.
So that I put away as well. And then during the shift, using the appropriate hand hygiene and appropriate attire. And then before I leave work, once I change back into my street clothes, I make sure that my identification is all wiped down and anything that's coming home with me. Where before I used to bring a big work bag in that had all sorts of things in it, any snacks I wanted, any extra socks, whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, my bag was always filled. I don't bring in a bag anymore. I have a little 1-gallon Ziploc bag that has my scrub caps in it. I have a couple of extra procedure masks that are in it, just in case something's not provided when I first walk into the hospital. Mm-hmm. I have run into that they weren't there to provide me my mask when I first walk in. But I minimized anything that's coming out of the hospital with me. If I bring food in, I eat it. I leave anything there.
Mm-hmm.
But I bring minimal home. And then when I arrive home, I change out of my clothes. I wash up. And I constantly monitor myself for any symptoms. Before we were appropriately provided our PPE, we actually had quite a few nurses test positive on our unit early on, because we were only allowed to use our N95s if there was a PUI or a COVID positive, which at that point...
What's a PUI?
A patient under investigation.
Okay, uh-huh.
So, and we had to sign out our protective equipment for those patients. And it wasn't until a couple of our pregnant nurses showed up positive. Ugh. And then boom, 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 seven more nurses right after them showed up positive that they were like, ooh, okay, we're going to need more protection around here. What's going on? Mm-hmm. I think it was because pregnant women are showing up asymptomatic. People weren't getting the testing, or people coming in with them were denying their symptoms. So I think, you know, I was a lot more nervous back when we weren't provided the PPE. But now that I go into work, I get on my, and as soon as I walk onto my unit, I get my surgical or my procedure mask when I first walk into the hospital. Everybody gets that. You actually have to show a COVID pass for the shift an hour or two before the shift starts. You have to go through, you have to log into an app, say that you don't have any symptoms, sign that you don't have any symptoms, and then show them that, get your surgical mask, and now you can work. Once I get to my unit and get changed, I get my N95 on, my surgical cap, and either glasses or goggles.
Yeah.
And I think I feel more protected. Definitely, I'm better about washing down computers and anything that I might be using before I even use it over washing and sanitizing. I mean, before I would wash all the time, but now even if I haven't been anywhere, I find myself anytime I go by, I'm constantly using. So I mean, my hands and arms are crazy dry from that.
Yeah.
But I do live with my husband and one of my children. My other two older children live out of the house. But, you know, I'm still around them. We share bathrooms. We mm-hmm. eat together. My husband and I still are in the same bed. You know, mm-hmm. it's, but in the back of my mind, I'm always thinking,
yeah.
Ooh, is that a little dry cough? Ooh, do I feel warm? Ooh, did the patient that I had the other day? It's always in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
But I am ready. I have a bug out bag ready to go if I find out that one of my colleagues or that I'm symptomatic. I have a bag packed, and I know I can go to a hotel for free. They have hotels where before it was a little more difficult before they had closed the hotels to the regular public. So, you know, I feel confident if I have to pull myself away from my family
mm-hmm.
that I could do it.
Yeah.
I have the means if I have to. I don't want to.
Yeah.
But it's a concern. I just have to hope that it passes by. My family, my loved ones, my home, myself. I'm boosting my immune system mm-hmm. every way I can. But I have a suppressed immune system anyway. I have psoriatic arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so my immune system is kind of a little out of whack anyway. But I think just with these last few years of really kind of changing my life habits, that I've been able to boost my immune system properly. And I just hope that everything I'm doing is going to keep this nasty virus away.
Now a word from our sponsor, Abridge. Use Abridge to record your green nurse visit. Push the big pink button and record the conversation. Read the transcript or listen to the clips when you get home. Check out the app, abridge.com. ABRIDGE.com, or download it on the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Record your healthcare conversations. Let me know how it went.
Well, just because I'm nosy, what do you do for fun?
What do I do for fun? Well, I mean, right now there's you know, kind of a restriction on fun. So right now I have, just since the quarantine, I have a segment on a morning show. It's called Green Nurse on the Grow. It's on Wednesday mornings and Sunday mornings at 10 o'clock on Disrupt America. Good Morning Shut-ins is the variety show that's on Disrupt America. And it's through Facebook Live, YouTube, Twitter. There's different platforms. But basically, I'm a novice grower. I can't grow a tomato. But, you know, really, once I got into this industry and working with other people and connecting with people, I was able to connect with some cultivators and mm-hmm. people that are helping coach my my lack of ability.
Okay.
And going on this show is amazing because each time I go on, they'll bring a cultivator on and I'll bring them through my garden, my grow. I have a couple of tents. This is a plant that has changed my life. Just 4 years ago was when I was kind of introduced to it. I had learned about the endocannabinoid system. And from there, you know, it just expanded when I saw that this plant changed my life. Now I can have a hand in growing my own medicine and medicine for many others as well. Mm. But it's something that takes up my time. Mm. I'm kind of stuck in the house when I'm not working at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So what's an endocannabinoid?
So an endocannabinoid system. Oh, so that is a system. It's a system of neurotransmitters of receptor sites all over your body, and it incorporates every single other system in your body, the cardiovascular system, the respiratory system, the immune system. I mean, every single system it's connected to. And what I found is that when it is imbalanced, it can affect one or many of those other systems. And, you know, what I found is when I started incorporating cannabis as a healthy routine, I had partaked as adult use occasionally here and there. But once I really started delving into it and learning what it could do for my body, you know, I got off many of my pharmaceuticals. I was a victim of polypharmacy. I was on more than 10 meds. Mm-hmm. With autoimmune disorder, I've had a brain hemorrhage, chronic pain, spinal stenosis, and just the typical stress of being a nurse, trying to raise a family. I'm married. I have 3 children, working shift work. I was charge nurse of my labor and delivery unit. It's a very busy unit. So just being pulled in many different directions, and my body was just, you know, decompensating.
Yeah.
And what I found is that I was running towards more unhealthy habits at that point.
Okay.
So once I started changing things up, I had started utilizing cannabis in a healthier way. I was able to sleep more. I had more energy. I was making better choices. When you feel good, you're making better choices in what you eat and and how you exercise. The energy level had gone up.
Mm. How has your experience with cannabis helped you negotiate this change in your work life as a nurse, all gowned up and not able to hug and touch?
With how has cannabis?
I get the sense that you've been really challenged by the shift into this highly protected persona as a nurse. That's been really a challenge. And,
right.
And so I'm wondering, has your growing experience with cannabis and the benefits of cannabis for you, has that helped you deal with the stress of work?
Well, I think cannabis helps me deal with the stress of life in general, whether it be work, whether it be family. It has balanced my mood. It has allowed me to not fly off the handle. If I find that I'm overwhelmed with life, whether it be work, whether it be home, I'm able to take a step back. It's taking that breath. It's forcing me to take a breath, because whether I smoke it or whether, you know, I ingest it, you know, it's bringing me into focus. It's kind of making me step back and say, hey, things might seem bad, but we can get through this. We've been through worse, and it's just another blip in the road.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Danny. It was awesome. I was really nervous at first. I was like, oh my God, how am I going to prepare for this? Oh my God, I hate, you know.
It was fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. You made me feel really comfortable.
Oh, good. Hey, we're nurses.
Yeah, we are nurses. We are. And it is the year of the nurse.
Well, Jody, thanks for all you do. This has been a great conversation. You'll be in my heart.
Thank you, Danny.
So, thank you.
It was awesome. It was really good.
Okay, see, it fits together. Staying sane in an insane situation. How do our frontline essential workers all of them juggling duty, passion, family, income, pressure. How do moms, babies, and their partners manage the blurring of tragedy and trauma and hope and possibility? I've known, accepted, and even been grateful for that blurring most of my life. But most people don't. For most people, it's not a gift. Nevertheless, I'm grateful for nurses like Jody. You're in my heart. Let's celebrate the year of the nurse. See the show notes, previous podcasts, and other resources on my website, www.health-hats.com/pod. Please subscribe or contribute. If you like it, share it. Thanks. See you around the block.